the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be with you on another whatever day of the week it is that you listen to the show, whether it's the day it releases or some other day, or we could be in like 2036 right now and you're just finally getting yourself acquainted. So at any rate, we love you and we're glad you're listening. Just a quick heads up on the rest of the show. We have got a Q&A later on during the show, and we're going to be talking with John Thomas. You all know and love him from our Boundless Answers column. He is on the phone this time to talk about readiness with a guy. Like, is he ready for marriage, basically? And he wants to know if he is, and John will certainly tell him. Then a very exciting culture segment. I've interviewed our own H.B. London. H.B. London is our vice president of church and clergy here at Focus on the Family. He is retiring like this month, basically. This is his last month at Focus after 20 years. He is Dr. Dobson's cousin and has really seen a lot here at Focus on the Family, as well as in ministry in general. He was a pastor for like 30 years prior to coming here. So just a huge history in him, and I'm going to be talking to him about legacy and what he's learned in the trenches of ministry and in fatherhood. He's got grown sons, and so he's going to impart a lot of wisdom to us. So we're excited about that. And then for this week's roundtable, I've got a great group assembled, and this is going to be a fun way to make some introductions. First off, to my left, I'm going to introduce Amy Seed. Amy, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Amy, and when she says glad to be here, she means glad to be here because she just arrived. Amy is one of our summer interns, fresh from California, from the town of Coalinga.
Woo! Yeah.
So, you know, which isn't LA, but it's like the next, it's like the second biggest city in California, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely very close.
Mm-hmm. Very fun. So tell us what you're studying in school and where you're going to school.
Mm-hmm. I will be a senior at Biola University in the fall, and I'm a print journalism major, so I'm doing a little bit of print plus online, kind of mixing the two. So,
very cool. Well, great to have you here.
Thank you.
Yay. And then to her left is Megan Panoreski. Megan, welcome.
Hello.
Yay. Fresh from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But tell us about your problem with cheese.
Oh, I recently found out I have a dairy allergy. So I don't eat cheese very often, even though I'm from Wisconsin. I like it. Well, once in a while I can cheat. It's okay.
I know. And I just love how we just stereotype people like, oh, you're from Wisconsin. Do you just eat cheese every day?
I've heard that probably three times since I've been to Colorado, and it's been less than a week. So I guess that's what everyone thinks of Wisconsin.
Awesome. Well, tell us about your schooling and what you're studying.
I go to Concordia University, Wisconsin, and I'm studying psychology and business communication.
All right.
So I'd like to go into maybe marriage ministry or something with event coordinating. I like them both a lot.
Awesome. Well, like I said, this is literally their first day here. They are our interns for the summer, and so you'll be hearing more from them for sure. We have Martha with us in the studio. Martha, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa.
Great to have you here. And also our own Jeremy Woodard. Jeremy, welcome.
Howdy.
Hey. Jeremy's been on a past show or shows, which...
Actually, one show.
One show.
But that's okay.
But soon
second
to be
time's a charm.
Soon to be back, you know, in the future, I'm sure. So Jeremy's a lot of fun and is part of our public policy department here at Focus on the Family. So very exciting. Citizen Link. Anyway, okay, well, kind of a motley crew assembled, but here's our topic for the day. Some of you out there, I don't know how many of you out there, but definitely some of you, because I've mentioned this on Boundless a couple times now, the cat's out of the bag. I will be turning 40, I guess, next week. June 18th, Saturday.
It's the new 20.
It is. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago, this didn't sound that bad. And it was just kind of like, oh, 40, you know, let's just embrace it, everyone, all the people that I knew that were turning 40. And then now as it's kind of creeping up on me, I've been a little bit more, reflective and philosophical about it. So Martha and I were talking about this, and I was like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about 40, and it's okay, and whatever, and I don't know how I'm going to deal with it. And I have a friend who turned 40 a couple of years ago, and she was like, well, actually, leading up to turning 40 was much worse than once it actually happened. So anyway, I got Martha and I to talking about just decades, because Martha is...
I'm 29.
Martha's 29. She's got a decade looming upon her as well, although you have a little more time because you're recently 29.
Right. My birthday's in March, so.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that doesn't count.
You're just
a baby.
You're just a baby. So Martha's 29.
This is 29. My 30th year of life.
That's true.
So it's all about how you look at it.
Mm.
That is true, you know. And we don't know. I just keep telling people we need to get this show in the can because I don't. If I make it to 40, we'll see. You know, because it's just that age. I don't know. No, I'm just teasing. But I'm planning to run a 10K on my 40th birthday, the morning of, to kind of just celebrate. I have no idea what because I'll see if I can even finish it. But just trying to infuse some youth into myself, I think.
I believe we'll be there cheering you on.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, I'm going to be eating Doritos, so I'm not running.
Well, please.
That's a true friend.
Make sure your son is there, too. I want him cheering me on. That'd be good. Well, that'll be fun. So, yes. So Martha and I started talking about this, and we were just like, this is a great topic because there are just different seasons of life, whether it's a new decade or whether it's a milestone or just those things that everyone kind of attaches some meaning to. That is a good time to pause and reflect and think about what are our hopes and our fears and just our, you know, concerns or stories surrounding this. Because I think maybe where we are and where we thought we would be or what that would look like is sometimes different from what we're actually experiencing. So we have the girls in the fray here, Megan and Amy, because they are in the college fray. And I remember when I was there back in the day. A couple of years ago. I just remember that being a very stressful, huge, that is a very life-changing transition to get out of high school when you were literally told what to do, whether you're at school or living within your parents' house or whatever. You go into college, you're still kind of structured, but, you know, you've got some decisions to make and you run your own schedule and maybe some people don't make it to class, whatever. And then you're out of college and it could be just a free-for-all and you have to start making decisions like crazy. So let's go ahead and just start by talking about where we are right now and any reflections we have on kind of, you know, whether it's age or stage or just kind of what God's teaching you or what kind of some of the things are that you're wrestling with where you are in life right now.
I honestly have to look back at my 20s and be just amazed of all the opportunities I had. Of my plan was marriage and family, but I ended up getting a really fun job with Brio Magazine and lots of missions trips and mother-daughter cruises and interviewed all kinds of cool people. So really, I look back and think, wow, God, what are my 30s going to be if it's already been so much fun? So it's with some anticipation I look forward, but also it's all not knowing what could be ahead. It's a little scary, too.
So how many cruises?
Three.
Three.
She's now depressed. Everyone out there who like is not satisfied with their job. I know Martha's job, and that's his name. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Are there any openings? Because I would like to take a cruise. Never been on one.
Well, maybe we'll plan a boundless cruise at some point.
Maybe.
We'll see, you know.
I have
we'll
experience, so.
Yeah, you just got 4,000 people saying like on Facebook.
Uh-huh. The boundless cruise.
Nice.
That'll be our summer project as interns.
Yeah, there we go. Yep. We'll come up with something related to that. So, anyone else?
I feel like the last couple of days have been a big transition for me because I went to college only about 15 minutes from my house. So I did live on campus, but I always had my mom bringing me lots of things, especially with my food allergy. She would keep me stocked up on food, and I wasn't all that far away from home. And now all of a sudden I'm several states away from home. And when I dropped my parents off at the airport and I was driving back by myself with my own car, nowhere near my parents, I just started crying because that kind of... It was a great freedom, but it was humbling, too, the way that God has brought me out here and finally allowed me to be standing without those parents. It's certainly still in my life, but I've never been so on my own like this before, and so it's crazy, and it's such a blessing. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that where Amy and I are at around the age 20 landmark, it's much less of a taboo in our society. It's more of a glorified thing, you know, turning 20 and age 21, you're great. It's the prime of your life. And I think it probably becomes less of a wrestling match than maybe the other decade milestones.
Mm-hmm. You welcome it with open arms rather than trying to run away from it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess kind of to relate to that, I have 3 years of college under my belt, and I know they've all three of those years have kind of been stretching and growing me in my faith and also in the career that I've chosen in journalism. And I know going far away from home kind of has been involved in that. I went to D.C. a year ago, and that is definitely way on the other side of the country and so far from home. And but it's just been crazy the roads that God has been leading me down. And I'm finding that my 20s, I'm only 21, but they've been such a blessing so far.
And along with that, I agree with Amy that this has been an incredible time of growth. Like every couple of months, there's something new, and I feel like such a different person. And I want to ask, you know, as time goes on, as you hit more milestones, do you find yourself changing less, or do you still find yourself having lots of dramatic transitions and personality changes and things?
That's a great question. A little background first. I'm turning 30, and I did get married at, I think, 12, for a very long time. And we have a new little son, so my feelings are usually along the lines of, how do I take care of my family? So as opposed to, what am I going to do with my life? Mm-hmm. Actually, it's the exact same thing. What am I going to do with my life?
Get so I could doing take- it.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but I would say my transition into 20 or beyond college was big, but it was nowhere near as big as the entire 20s into my 30s, since I'm not 30 yet. Hopefully it'll continue. But no, I feel like I've grown far more, especially in my relationship with God, because being on my own for 10 years, if you can count it that, because I've been married the entire time, but God really reveals himself a lot more, because like you were saying, I remember that feeling when I was 20 going, oh my gosh, you know, I've never been this far away from home, or that kind of feeling where, you know, I'm finally standing on my own 2 feet. Mm-hmm. Well, in that time, you really, you have a bit of a covering with your family. And sure. So at this time, it's kind of weird to have God be my covering so that I can be the covering for my family. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different.
I think I, you know, my 20s, when I look back at them, it's funny because now, because I do what I do, a lot of people think, Lisa, how in the world did you get into this world of Boundless? And before this, you were in media PR, and I too worked in DC. And, but I tell people I've done a lot of really cool things. And whenever I mentor, especially girls, I always say, you know, first of all, you have to understand I've done a lot of cool things, but I've done a lot of really lame things as well. So a lot of my 20s were very, I guess, bifurcated or just kind of scattered in the sense that I did a big chunk of temping, and I was trying to find myself and figure out what would I do, and I moved all over the country. In fact, this last time when I came to work for Focus was the first time I'd ever moved anywhere with a job. I used to just pack up my car and move somewhere and like go live with friends or go start some temp job or try something new. And then I would get a really good gig and do a really cool job and be out there doing something. And then I'd be like, well, I don't know about that. And so it was just very frenetic. And it's kind of, I think, a combination of the curse of the liberal arts degree and my own risk-taking mentality and the way I approached it and stuff. But for me, my 30s were really a chance for me to settle in on something and start kind of building my life currently as a single adult, which was mixed with joy and sorrow in the sense that I kind of had a sad day when I realized that I no longer can move in my car. You know, you put down roots and you start accumulating things, and it's like, oh my goodness, I've got this house full of junk. What am I going to do? You know, and so you feel kind of grown up with that. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm doing my taxes and I'm paying bills and I'm, you know, doing all this random stuff. And yeah, just kind of keeping up with stuff that's tricky, I think.
So you excited about turning 40?
I'm kind of excited about turning 40. I feel that I'm younger than 40, and so I'm trying to embrace that because I feel like, you know, there's part of me that's like, you know what, it is just a number. No one ever thinks I'm 40 or heading towards 40, so I'm okay with that. But for me, it's been interesting because there are a lot of things. This is actually coming up on a year where I'm turning 40, and the year that I turned 30 was also the year that my dad died of cancer, just a couple months after my birthday. And then at the same time, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, and it was just a very monumental year. And 9/11 happened. Oh my goodness. That whole year, I just wanted to write off the whole thing. And so for me, 10 years out of that, and having just grown a lot from that and looking back, the one thing I see, I think, that's related to this discussion is feeling, especially when I think of my dad, how much life I've lived and how much I really feel I am different and, you know, grown and matured that my dad never had a chance to experience, you know, and he never knew Boundless and he never knew, you know, some of the things that I've had a chance to do or the people I've had a chance to talk to and stuff. And so I miss not having that little slice of my story in that. But at the same time, recognizing that there's been so much good come out of that. And I feel like my 30s kind of were my growing up decade to really take ownership of my life and start contributing things, you know, rather than taking. I think I did a lot of my 20s. I was just so floundering, like, what do I do next? Where do I, you know, what's my identity? That it was just a very unsettled time. And so my 30s, I've been able to say, this is what I know. This is who I am. This is the God I trust. And let me tell you about him. So it's been really comforting to be part of that, I think.
Doing a lot of ministry.
Right.
There you go.
24/7.
Well, then, I kind of wonder of how things will change church-wise of moving into my 30s of, like, there's college groups and 20-something groups and 30-something groups. And just a couple years
ago,
too many groups. That's probably true. I did join another small group a couple years ago where I'm one of the younger ones. And it was an interesting transition of, okay, they're not really talking about what am I going to do with my life or what job am I going to get. It's more of how can I enjoy this job that I have? And I don't know. I guess it's been good stretching of they can go before me and teach me what they learn. So
yeah.
Are you going to be in a 40-something group now? Or
I hope not. No.
Oh my gosh. Do they even have those?
I don't even know.
Do they?
Not at my church. They don't really. Okay. I mean, there's nothing that's really specific for that. That's one of my sister's gripes is that when we talk about singleness, because she was married at like 21 or 20 or something like that way back in the day, and she said, Lisa, that's the problem now is there's too many options. You have too many like small groups. You can be like, you know, people that read Jane Austen and ride Harleys and there's a small group for you, you know. And she's like, when I was, you know, there, he's like, you were in the college group or you were in the young marrieds group. You didn't have this whole like. So she thinks it's a little bit too many options for people. Yeah. But so what do y'all think about like where you are now? Is your life what you thought it would look like now, where you are, age and stage? I mean, Martha, you alluded to that a little bit of feeling like, no, you probably thought you'd be at home and a mom with kids.
Yeah, it's true. Yet at the same time, there's a lot of steps that have to happen before you're a mom at home with kids. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I can't imagine suddenly being in that realm, like first things first. So maybe my 30s will be the time. We'll see.
Yeah. I would imagine you, Jeremy, I mean, you have a little boy now who's just over one.
Yes.
And that has probably been a big game changer for you.
That is a big game. And I like that phrase too, game changer, you know, it's just very catchy.
I'm gonna find a few buzzwords to work into the conversation.
I really appreciate
it. In the next few minutes.
Yeah. Well, my son is a game changer. No, I actually thought, and it's really interesting that you were saying what you pictured, because my wife and I had always talked about three kids. And so we have our first one who's younger than one, but we both thought going into marriage that we were going to have all three easily by 30. So I mean, it's a small thing, but when you're planning ahead, it became a big thing that we both kind of had to deal with. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of exciting now, you know, kind of getting into it. Mm-hmm. But yes, times have changed.
Yeah. Well, it's no longer just, you know, throw everything down and do whatever you want to do.
Right.
You have other people to consider.
Which I've tried, and then my wife tells me, you know, you have to come home sometimes. And I'm, okay, yes, that's a good point.
That's true, yeah. How about you guys? Any thoughts about college and where you are and what you thought you'd be doing?
It's different than what I thought. It's a lot crazier than I expected it to be. I had no idea I would be interning, you know, three states away from home right before my senior year. I have a lot more going on than I thought, but it's been really good. It's been a crazy adventure, but I've enjoyed all of it. And I'm really excited to see what happens when I graduate. People are starting to ask me, hey, what are you going to do when you graduate? Do you know where you want to work? And I have no idea, but I'm trusting God and praying and just taking every opportunity that comes my way.
That's good. I think in a lot of ways my life right now is about what I expected, but one transition that I've had to make that I didn't expect is I think I've spent a lot of my life looking forward to this time in my life and planning for this time in my life and having a very forward focus. And when I got here, I almost had to make this thought transition of, okay, wait, this is the time that I've always been looking forward to. I can't just live in the future anymore. Not that that was necessarily ever a good thing, but I realized, wow, this is my life right now, and I'm learning how to enjoy the present instead of pouring all my energy into planning for my future, because real life is right here, right now.
Mm-hmm. That's a great perspective, though, of doing what you can with today, and you've got a week more at 39. I've got a few more months at 29, and don't worry so much about what's ahead.
Mm-hmm.
We could all do better at that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'm definitely one of those people that likes to plan ahead. I'm the one who every January makes my friends sit down and write out goals, and then I say, and then a few times during the year we're going to follow up with each other and follow up on our goals. And but at the same time, recognizing that in the midst of all this dreaming and hoping and planning, time does march on. And I think that's one of the things that I've realized now coming up, because it's no longer, I used to always be like, I'm the youngest of six kids, so I used to always be the youngest or the young one, or oh my goodness, you know, people would make cultural references and I would say, I don't know, I wasn't born then. Now I've been born for most of what people are talking about, okay? So it's just like I can no longer fall back on that excuse and stuff. But I think it is, you know, kind of interesting to see as I look at that to say, okay, well, there are definitely some things that I need to recognize and realize are realities. And I've talked about this in the past on the show, the fact that when it comes to marriage and family, you know, I always assumed it would happen. And then one day I woke up and I realized, okay, it's not going to happen in my 20s. And so I kind of had to grieve that a little bit because, you know, it just wasn't there and it wasn't part of my reality. And now I'm going to probably have to grieve that a little bit, leaving my 30s and realizing it's not part of my story. But, you know, and grieving my dad and just the things that I've lost, you know, over the years. And as you get older, you start losing more things, you know, and you realize and you start encountering more hardship. And that's just the way it plays out. So I find a lot of times now when I talk to people that are in their 70s and 80s, sometimes I can relate to them with some of the things they're going through, whereas my peers, it's like, you know, maybe there hasn't been a lot of tribulation and stuff in a lot of their lives yet. But
my mom just mentioned recently of one of the great things about getting older is that you can look back and see God's faithfulness through different seasons of your life. And it's just, it's a benefit that older people get that the younger ones don't.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we have that to look forward to.
Well, which reminds me, I mean, I would encourage everyone, if you haven't listened to the show, it was back late fall sometime where we did a show called A Letter to My Former Self. And I remember Yvette Marr, one thing that she said was, she said, I wish that I would have kept a prayer journal and recorded all the prayers that were answered, because it's so hard to remember those. And I can see that in my own story too, of just, if I don't tell the stories often enough, I'll forget them. And so just to write things like that down, like where you've really seen God move and where you've really seen a huge leap of faith or something where God answered something, is a great thing to do, because I think it gets you through that next stage where you're just like, this is going to be horrible and I'm not going to be able to deal with this and it's going to be so much worse than this was, and you know, so whatever. So I think that's an encouragement too. But yeah, so kind of cool. So anything that you are like looking forward to, like what is next for you as far as whether, you know, what you hope for in the next decade or in the next stage, you know, where you are? It's not too bad, I don't think, Megan, to look to the future, you know, live in the present, but also look
absolutely
to the future. So what are some of your big hopes for that?
I think that I have some very vague plans. I would like to get married. I get the impression that God has that plan for me, but of course I don't know that, so we'll see where he takes me. And like I mentioned before, I would like to do something with marriage ministry, but I think I like to plan a little bit more vaguely and not lock myself into things and just kind of stand back and see what God does. And I think that I have the luxury of doing that at this point in my life, and so that's what I'm going to do. I'm not sure if I will always have that luxury, but definitely standing back and waiting for God to move is a humbling thing to do, and it helps keep my eyes in the right place.
I think kind of like what Megan said, I'm making plans for the future, but not, it's nothing permanent. I'm kind of waiting on God and seeing where he leads, because I've figured out I can make my own plans, but then God ends up changing them anyway. So I'm kind of just learning to wait on God. And I'm kind of just looking forward to getting a full-time job, doing what I love. Hopefully with the way the job market is, I can find something in journalism. It's not too easy nowadays. But, and I'm also hoping for marriage for the future. And it's kind of hard to plan. I'm graduating soon. Am I getting married? Am I working close to home? I don't know. Those are kind of anxieties that I have. But just trusting God and seeing where things go for the future and just waiting for any adventure that comes my way.
I remember being at work one time, and I work with some people that are maybe in their 50s or 60s, and I was going through something rough one morning. I was crying at work, and I asked them, you know, when you go through all of these things and you look back, do you ask yourself why you worried so much? And they're like, oh yeah, you don't know, you know, you worried so much, but it all works out. God makes it all work out. And we wondered why we we had those intense fears, but you know, mm-hmm. of course, we're human and we don't know very much, so mm-hmm. we're going to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Reminds me of when I was in junior high back in California, and a friend and I sang for the church offertory one week, and we didn't even think of this, but the song that we sang was Through It All. We did a version of the hymn, mm-hmm. and my mom afterwards came up to me and she's like, not really sure I would have chosen that hymn for you. I'm not really sure of what you've been through that's going to really resonate with people out there. But nevertheless, we appreciated it. And it is true. You know, we just think all of our little dramas that we've gone through earlier, you know, are these big deals.
Well, the first 12 are the hardest. So let's just get beyond the first 12, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So what about you guys? Looking forward to...
I think maybe embracing that I'm not a college graduate, fresh, you know, mm-hmm. of... kind of putting down some roots a little bit more and mm-hmm. being a contributor, like that stood out to me of what you said earlier. So I've already bought a house and I have a job that I enjoy. So mm-hmm. those things are kind of settled and mm-hmm. probably just investing in relationships more. And mm-hmm. nieces and nephews are way fun. That has been a nice surprise in my late 20s. So mm-hmm. yeah, we have that to look forward to.
Yeah, that's fun.
Congratulations on the house, by the way.
Well, thank you.
I just feel like that should be a congratulating
experience. Okay.
when I was thinking about your question while these guys were talking, one thing that stood out to me was when I was in my 20s, bulk of my 20s, since I'm still here, I didn't realize just how selfish I was. And people say when you get married, you don't, you know, then you realize how, no. When you're married, you're still selfish sometimes. But when you actually have a kid, then you realize just how selfish you were. And so that's the one thing that my son's taught me. So I think that what I'm looking forward to is just seeing where God is going to take my family and me and really do something bigger than us mm-hmm. And our small unit. But one thing that stood out to me, what each of you guys said, is actually just relying on God. And the one thing that I remember a lot of was feeling a lot of pressure about what I'm not doing. What I can't control, but what I'm not doing to control it. And that's one thing that over the last, I'd say probably a couple of years, God's really shown me is that actually letting him lead works. And it's a lot better than anything else that I could have expected. So I'm pretty excited to see that, you know, going forward.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's true. And Amy, I think you alluded to this a little bit. One thing I thought of when you were talking about, you know, you're not entirely sure where everything's going to lead. You just have to take opportunities. I think that's something I wish I would have learned a little bit earlier, is just to relax and to walk through doors as they open and to not totally try to orchestrate everything. Because I think there's so much talk now about calling and about all these amazing things that we have to do. And if you're not doing this amazing thing that someone else is doing, mm-hmm. then you're not in God's will or whatever. And I mean, the best professional and personal things I think that have happened to me have been recently when I've just decided to walk through doors or walk through opportunities or get to know people as I see them or as I'm acquainted with them or whatever. And it's been cool. And I've just, you know, gotten to know people that I never would have expected and just
You're
had
welcome.
Different opportunities. Jeremy being chief among them. So I think that's been really neat. But also on that front, I think another thing is getting back to Martha being a contributor. That for me, I think, is one of the sadnesses I have to wrestle with, too, because I miss a little bit of that early season of just being kind of like the one to ask all the questions and the one to, now I feel like, you know, I don't want to be this like, hello, old woman, let us sit at your feet. I'm definitely seeing myself move more into the mentor role.
Bless.
And it's a great thing. It's a great place to be, but it does have to. I always think everyone is like my age. I just assume that we're all within like 3 years of one another. I'm recognizing that that is no longer the case. You know, it was, I think, a couple semesters ago when we had a couple interns here and we were talking about Madonna, whom they thought apparently started her career with her remake of The Day the Music Died, the whole American Pie thing. And I was like, she was in the 80s. And they're like, what? You know, they thought she was like a new artist. And I was like, stop it. So yeah, so I don't even want to know when you That's guys were born, because it's going to depress me. So no, it's okay. But well, great thoughts, everyone. I think this has been cool. And just a good time to reflect and good way to look at different perspectives and what life has brought us and where we are and where we're going. So I think it's good food for thought. So maybe those of you out there who are reflecting on a season of life or entering a new one can write to us at editor@boundless.org and give us your own stories so we can learn from one another in the midst of this. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks.
See ya.
Put your smile on. Today is gonna save us. Let the bridge down. The sun is gonna wake us.
Well, hey everyone, we are here for another culture segment at The Boundless Show, and I'm very excited to be sitting in Studio A here at Focus on the Family with H.B. London. H., welcome.
Thanks, Lisa. Nice to be with you.
Oh, very fun to have you. And it's not that you are new to the show. You've been on our show before, especially around Clergy Appreciation Month, when right. you gave us some great insights on how to best honor our pastors, especially as young adults, when we feel kind of disenfranchised sometimes in the church or maybe forgotten. And you were very helpful in telling us that, you know, really pastors are looking to that next generation to step up and start leading and start showing up in church. sometimes
That's
we have to yell
one.
At
yeah,
young adults up, about yeah, that. Could yeah, you please yeah. show up more yeah. than once a month yeah. or once a quarter? Yeah. That would be helpful. So, but HB is Vice President of Church and Clergy here at Focus on the Family. He pastored for 31 years. He's been at Focus now how long?
Almost 20.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. 20 in October.
That's crazy, because aren't you like 40?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe a couple yeah. years over 40. So, which is why we brought you in, because you have a lot to say, I think, to our generation. And you are on the verge of, sniff, grab your tissues, people. HB is going to retire from his role here at Focus on the Family now in June. And we are going to miss him. He is going to go and sit in the desert in California or something crazy like that when he's not out and about yeah. speaking and continuing to write. So how are you feeling about that transition?
Well, it's bittersweet. I'm sad inside. I wake up in the morning and I get going, and all of a sudden a sadness will hit me and I realize what it's all about. It's about leaving my colleagues here. It's 20 years of investment in the church and in clergy. It's one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my career. Mm-hmm. And so to leave that and walk away from it is tough, but it's right. It's the time, and I'm going to finish strong, and I'm going to try to keep from crying at mm-hmm. chapel on the 10th when they do whatever they're going to do to me.
Yeah,
and,
watch
so
out
it
for
just
that.
It just a, you know, it's been an exciting two decades, and just to walk away from it is impossible without having some bittersweet feelings.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be leaving behind your assistant of how many years?
38 years. She's never worked for another guy in 38 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And on July 1, Sue McFadden, who has stayed single all of her life.
Yeah.
And
probably because you sucked all the time out of her, H. She couldn't even go out and date anyone because she was so busy following you around.
Invested in our ministry from Oregon to California to Colorado. On July 1, she'll be working for a new person for the first time in 38 years.
Wow. Wow. Well, I'll just have to find. Hopefully, she's not going to say anything bad about you on Facebook, because I follow her page sometimes.
I know,
she's
a pretty prolific
any,
on Facebook.
Any vendettas, she's going to be outspoken about them right there. So you got to watch watch your back. So you are also, I neglected to mention, the father of two grown sons
right.
and a granddad, and your wife Bev has been involved here at the ministry at Focus as well, and just a neat part of that. You're a cousin to Dr. Dobson, so you kind of have that little bit of family
nepotism, as others have called
I was going to say nepotism, then I decided to rein myself in.
But he's not here, and I am. So,
I know.
Beverly, for 12 years, she worked part-time in all the interior design at mm-hmm. all the buildings here. Mm-hmm. And three of my four grandchildren are in university, one in Oregon State, and then Point Loma University. So they're in this boundless world, too.
Wow. Yeah, that's very true. And we're, like I said, we're very passionate about young adults here, and we like to see that play out generationally and what we have to say to them through folks like you who are a few steps ahead of us. So I want to ask, just getting back to the focus question, what would you say would be one of your most memorable moments here at Focus on the Family in the past 20 years?
Well, you know, I think, you know, you look back and you think about Dr. Dobson having the stroke and then him kind of coming back from the dead and me standing in front of our employees and knowing what was going to happen next, saying that we have two board members who are going to come and share with you about Dr. Dobson's condition, and then he walks out.
Mm-hmm. And give the time frame on that for people that don't know. It was not long after the stroke.
No, it was 7 days after the stroke, and it was
almost amazing. Almost a Lazarus.
Yeah, almost a miraculous kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's one. I think the other thing is being MC of the chapel, the Investiture Chapel, when we passed the baton on to Jim Daly and he assumed the responsibility for this ministry, a huge undertaking for, at that time, a 47-year-old young man, father of two, and following an icon and a worldwide ministry. I think that was an important, important thing.
Yeah, that's cool. And you've seen a lot of transition here, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, coming from, you know, the California transition to out here to seeing a number of different, in fact, you spoke to our department a few weeks ago and just talked about the various departments that at one point or another had been under your leadership and a lot of that, including the, what was then the youth outreach and our plugged in department.
Yeah, and the senior citizen ministry, Focus Over 50. And
see, young folks and the seniors, you know, do it all.
It was interesting. At one time we had the plugged in youth culture ministry and the Focus Over 50 all at the same time.
See, and that's already multi-generational.
We had the Pregnancy Resource Council and the doctors, you know, Physicians Research Council.
That's great.
So it was just a lot of things and very exciting.
That's great.
Very exciting.
So you, H, looking back on your life and your career, now you were in college, in Bible school, and maybe had a few issues. You were an interesting guy. You weren't one of, you know, for a guy who's come out of a line of pastors, you know, kind of that little squeaky, and I'm the same place, you know, my parents were missionaries and my dad was a pastor, and but you struggled a little bit to find out what God was going to do with your life and had to live out that story. And, you know, you can go into that as much or as little as you want, but I want to hear from you. You know, looking back then, had you looked in your mid-20s and then been able to look to where you are now, what do you see as far as God crafting your story, just the uniquenesses of it? Because I think so many young adults think we have to be doing these amazing things, and if by the time we're not, you know, 30, we haven't done this, this, and this, and certainly we don't want any disappointment. We want to be comfortable, but yet we want to be effective. And how do you see, looking on the whole tapestry of your life and ministry, some really unique ways that God worked?
Well, you know, first of all, I was an only child, so I had that going either for me or against me. I came out of four generations of clergy, so, you know, my whole life experience was built in the church and based in the church. And so naturally, I resisted a lot of the things that fell on my plate. Then my dad, when I was 16, had an affair with his secretary. He was a very high-profile pastor, and it was devastating to me and to my mother, and it created havoc in our life for the rest of our lives. And so I skipped the third grade. So when I got out of high school at 17, I started college early at Pasadena College, now Point Loma University. And I was resistant to any kind of authority just simply because my dad, who had been my hero, had let me down. So I didn't trust anybody. And as a result of that, my behavior was full of misadventures and rebellion and all those things. And I was kicked out of school, but there were some people who invested in me and took me on as a project and allowed me to get back in. So I got married very young. Beverly was 1 month into her 19th birthday, and I was just 20. Then we had a child a year later, and then back to seminary. And then I took my first pastorate when I was 23, and as a senior pastor. I didn't know up from down. Right. But nevertheless, they call me Pastor London.
And your office was in a closet, I remember you saying. That was great.
Yeah. And so, I've had a lot of those years were crowded with eventful things, you know, getting out of school, back into school, graduating, getting married, going to seminary, having children, coming out of seminary, starting a pastorate at a church that nobody gave it any chance of succeeding.
It's like a torpedo into maturity. I mean, it's like sink or swim maturity, basically.
It really was. And, and so I didn't have a dad to really lean on as a result of that. So I, you know, I made a lot of mistakes. But there were always people who came along and put their arm around me and said, "We believe in you. You know, you're making a lot of mistakes, but you'll learn from those."
And so as you now from that period of just, you know, obviously you pastored then for many years after that before coming to Focus. Is that something you saw yourself? Did you just figure, "I'm going to be a pastor and that's going to be it"? So how, I mean, when the Focus opportunity came about, did that involve a lot of prayer, a lot of, you know, additional direction or?
Well, I pastored four churches in those 31 years, one of them for 20 years. And the first two were short term, 3.5 years. And we just kind of grew with them and then moved to the next level. The last two churches were mega churches before the mega church handle was placed on churches. You know, we were running 2,000 and 3,000 at those times back in the 70s and 80s, which was unusual for any church to be running that many. I was Dr. and Mrs. Dobson's pastor in Southern California, and we were sitting at a table one night at dinner talking about all the crisis mail that was coming out of clergy homes, and then he just looked and he said, "I wonder if you and I could work together without killing each other," because as you mentioned, we were cousins and he was a year older and we had all that sibling stuff going. But that was in the late, you know, the late 80s, and it just evolved until in 1991 we came to Focus on the Family. And the prayer issue was more, Beverly, after 31 years as a pastor's wife, her mindset was, she was kind of like the guy in the Bible that got healed. She went laughing and leaping, praising God, because she was tired of being a pastor's wife. But for me, it was a real culture shock, because I was head of something. I had a large staff, mega church, had a cathedral-like sanctuary and building. I mean, huge in Southern California. And then I came to Focus on the Family, not as a vice president, but I just answered to a VP much younger than me who didn't know why I was here and could have cared less, really. And for the first 3 or 4 months, I just sat wondering why I had done this. The phone didn't ring. Nobody needed me. It was not Pastor London. It was just, who's that guy in the corner office over there? And then one day the Lord just gave me a mandate, and that was that I would be a pastor to pastors. That term had not even been created before I came here. That I would serve as a pastor to pastors, and my mandate was to help facilitate spiritual restoration and renewal in the life of clergy families, and then to come alongside and help them better manage their time and their finances and their personal lives. And that was, you know, that started in November of 1991. And so here we are almost 20 years later.
Which I think a lot of our audience would be surprised to hear that. You know, we probably have this idea of pastors of, you know, they're just coasting along because they're so close to God, and they certainly don't have problems because they marry these amazing pastors' wives and just have perfect families. But you know that that's not true.
Because pastors are people too.
Yeah.
And they have kids who don't always just measure up, and their marriages are not always great, and their finances are always a struggle. And pastors are built to see progress, and if they don't see progress, they wonder if they're making any difference. And the world kind of works against them, because we live in a counterculture society, and society is pretty well down on who we are and what we represent and the moralities that we try to preach and teach and my, you know, live above reproach, so to speak, so we don't have regrets. And so pastors not only have their issues, but they have a congregation full of issues. And so it's a double-edged sword. And what I say to so many as I look back at all the tragedies, because one of my responsibilities here at Focus on the Family has been first responder to disaster or natural disasters or whatever. And I go into these devastated areas and I see the roofs that are ripped off of their offices, and their books are mildewing, and their sermons have been lost, and all this kind of thing. But yet they can't take time to worry or to feel sorry for themselves, because they've got a whole congregation who are worse off than they are.
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique things that people don't realize FOCUS has done historically, especially in the last 10 years. Yeah. We've really been involved with natural disasters, not in a American Red Cross way of going out and sandbagging necessarily, but being that source of advice and encouragement and counseling for many individuals and pastors and churches as they've had to face loss and devastation.
Yeah, really what we've tried to do is go to the pastor and say, you know, we're here to support you. We know you've got your hands full. So what can we do for you while you do for others? Mm-hmm. That's really been our approach.
Yeah, that's great. Now, so in all this stuff that you've done, you, like you said, pastoring 4 different churches, coming to FOCUS, 20 years here, being in the lives of so many pastors, being a husband and a father, as you look, and we're not saying you're done, because you're not, even though you're, I say you're going to sit in the desert, but you're not. You're going to continue traveling and writing and speaking. What are you looking ahead, if you had to craft or say what your legacy is going to be on any number of fronts, what are you looking towards?
I think, you know, I think as one has a chance to kind of step back and look at his life, the one thing I've seen is that I took as my life verse, Proverbs 3:5-6, which a lot of people have, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not into your own understanding, and all thy ways acknowledge him and he will direct your path. I think what has happened is I look back over my life and I see the potholes and the zigzags and all of those kind of things, that when I've really been surrendered to the Lord, he has done just that. He has made my path straight. Mm-hmm. When I've been selfish and ego-centered and trying to make my own way, he's let me step in potholes and make mistakes. And I've had to go back and correct those. I think if I have a legacy, just from the mail I receive and the Facebook that are coming in now and all that, is that I genuinely love people. Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, I haven't used that as a crutch. I mean, for some reason, God really did give me a heart for people. And I cry when they cry and I celebrate when they celebrate. Mm-hmm. And one of the trademarks of my ministry is just a phrase I coined decades ago, God loves you today as though you're the only one in all the world to love, and that makes you a special person. Mm-hmm. I think if you go further than that, I think that the investment that FOCUS has made in me and I've made in the clergy world around us, it is that we found an organization and a person who understands us, really knows some of the things we're going through, and has not walked away from us but has stayed constant for these 2 decades. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be part of it. Yeah. And I think the other one, hopefully, and I'm not finished yet, but that he finished well. Mm-hmm. You know, that I remember a long, long time ago, Dr. Dobson said to me, once you get into this ministry, people are going to be looking in your closet. They're going to be trying to find anything they can find to diminish what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think as I sit with you today, Lisa, you know, I've not been perfect in any way, but I don't think that I've embarrassed FOCUS on the Family in these 20 years. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any regrets or anything you feel is kind of undone on the FOCUS?
Yeah, you know, it's almost the Schindler's List thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I had a few more years. I wish I was 10 years younger. I wish FOCUS had a bigger budget. You know, I wish I could have touched more, you know. Mm-hmm. I've flown 3 million miles since I've been here. I've been in every state and many, many foreign countries, you know, and I've never wanted to do anything more. You know, I've never wanted to be vice president of this or head of that. I've never wanted to be anything but a pastor to pastors. Mm-hmm. And I'm just grateful to the ministry for allowing me that privilege.
Yeah. Well, and it's quite a job, because I know even in some of the stats that I've seen come out of your department, were very surprising to me, that the number of churches in the U.S., for example, that are relatively small. Yeah. You know, so often, I mean, the churches we hear about are, you know, the John Pipers and the Mark Driscolls and the big, you know, John MacArthur and all these pastors that are out writing books. But, you know, the average pastor has, what, 150 people?
Oh, not even that. You know, if there's 320,000 churches in America, only 3,000 of them would be considered mega churches. Hmm. The average church is 100 adults or fewer on a given Sunday morning.
Okay. Wow.
And 85% of those are either plateaued or declined. I mean, the church as we see it, and that's a subject for a whole nother program, but the church as we see it is really stymied and plateaued, and something has got to happen. And I, I believe it is the local church who will be the catalyst, but the very people we're talking to are the ones we desperately need to invest themselves in the life of the church.
Yeah, the younger adults who need to step up. How would you say we could do that best?
I don't expect anybody to do this much, but I think to sit down with the pastor or the youth pastor or the single adults minister or whatever, and just let them talk to you about the church and the challenges of the church and the deficits of the church, but also the advantages of the church and how we who are young adults can make a difference. See, it's not always in the four walls of the church. See, I think sometimes young adults go to a church and they see what happens in the four walls, and that's discouraging, and they don't like the music, and it doesn't relate, and all those kind of things. But the role of the young adult in the church today is probably 90% outside the four walls and 10% in. Mm-hmm. And if we only knew that, then we would find ways to invest ourselves and to make a difference.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much ministry to be done in our communities and in our workplaces and in our, you know, I think when we think of growing the church, we think that we have to attract all these people to church programs and then somehow they're going to get saved through them, when really relationally doing sports, doing coffee, doing whatever with your neighbors is what allows them to see Christ in you, build that relationship. You know, I mean, just for lack of a better, you know, get them saved and then grow the church, get them into church. Yeah. You know, I think it's a little bit misplaced sometimes when we think that we need to have the church convincing them, you know, that the gospel is real.
You know, and pre-evangelism is just doing what Jesus did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and one of the things that, and I know we've not discussed this and we're going on a rabbit trail here, but this is a passion of mine. When Jesus sent the disciples out and the leaders of the church, he sent them out two by two. Mm-hmm. And what I'm thinking is that it is lonely as a young adult if you just have to embrace all these things by yourself. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that every young adult and everyone needs to have someone working with them or sharing in these ministries with them, because it makes it so much more enjoyable when there's two or three or four doing this instead of just one person carrying the load.
Yeah, that's true. So I think a lot of us, getting back to the whole idea of legacy, and as we look at investing in the church and investing in relationships, what would you say, H, is something that young adults need to be thinking of right now as they look at crafting their own legacy to ensure that they finish well?
I think that they need to really be thankful for what they have and not gripe and complain and moan. You know, when people are dispirited and find themselves always in the negative, you turn people away. Mm. And we need to be, I think we need to be magnets of enthusiasm and faith and joy. I think the other one is to genuinely love people and then to savor every minute. You know, life is so short. Man, I look back at my ministry. I can see as clear as day walking into that beat up old house that was a church in South Whittier, California, on that very first day I arrived in Southern California from seminary, and just thinking to myself, man, it's not much, but just think how privileged I am to have this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I've never lost that. Every day I come to work here at Focus on the Family, it's a gift to me. It's a joy because, you know, two and a half years ago, I almost died because of some mysterious illness. And I came out of that experience with a deep, deep desire, not only to do better what God had called me to do and to be more faithful to his word and to his assignment, but to savor every minute, mm-hmm. to make every minute count. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay, last question. Yeah. I know, you know, not only are you a pastor and like we've talked about your role here at Focus for so many years and what you've done, and you've written books and you speak, you're also a dad and you've also been responsible for growing, raising and mentoring two young men. Yeah. What did you do in that you did well and just in recognizing your responsibility to really churn out two guys who were ultimately going to be responsible for their own families at someday. Because, you know, our generation, the Gen X generation and millennials, historically have some of the worst role models. I mean, fatherlessness was huge for our generation, absentee fathers, feminism, divorce, we're all products of that. But you raised two sons who now have families of their own. Mm-hmm. What was your investment in them and how are you seeing it pay off?
I think if I could go back to when I mentioned to my dad, you know, when he walked away from us pretty much when I was 16, you know, that took all the wind out of my sails. And so I really didn't have the role model that I wanted. And as a result of that, even when I was growing up in the home, he was married to the ministry. And as a result of that, you know, our relationship was very poor. So in those early days of ministry, you know, a 23, 24, 25-year-old dad, I didn't have a lot of guidance. And so I made some huge mistakes as far as, you know, being married to the church as well and not being home when I should and all those kind of things. But, you know, through the years, what Bev and I have realized is that our priority was to our sons and to their upbringing and to their education. And Bev was a stay-at-home mom, which, you know, I'm grateful for that. And she invested heavily in the boys, even when I couldn't be there as often as I wanted. And so to now, when we look back, you know, I'm a fourth-generation minister. My two sons know the Lord. My two daughter-in-laws know the Lord. My four grandchildren know the Lord. And as a result of that, to me, that's the greatest achievement or gift of my life. You know, I've written 12 books, and I've pastored big churches, and I've been around the world, and I've worked at Focus on the Family, and I know you and others like you. And,
well, that in and of itself.
You know, and I've had all those privileges. But when I stop to think back on what is God's greatest gift to me, it is my family and the relationship that we enjoy. You know, there is no contentious relationship. There are no regrets. We don't have to, you know, at Thanksgiving, we don't, it's not a circle the wagon kind of event. It's mm-hmm. It's a festive celebrating time. Anytime we're together, it's a celebration time. And I, you know, and I didn't read any of Dr. Dobson's books because they had all been written by the time I'd raised my kids. But, you know, and even though we raised our kids much differently, you know, I think that Dr. Dobson and his mom and my mom were matriarchs, and they loved family, and they made sure we were together, and they tried to encourage us. And Dr. Dobson says that my mom had as much influence in his life as anybody that he's known, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that we had those kind of mothers who worked in our lives and took care of us and encouraged us and gave us self-image and refused to let go of us when we might want to stray away.
Well, awesome. I mean, just great, great insights. And I mean, it's been such a privilege for me to know you. We do, in fact, I don't think I've told the Boundless audience here, we do a thing here at Focus called Ambush Update, which is for our employees. And I don't even know how this started, but someone gave me a flip camera, which is dangerous in and of itself.
Yes.
And I just started wandering around the ministry and doing impromptu interviews with people because, as we all know, I just talk and I can't stop. But H was one of my victims at one point. And I think I asked you everything from what kind of band you'd want to front to what, you know, we just talked about all kinds of craziness. And he was a great sport. Really, that is just payback, though, because we didn't talk about how in all these years of him running our chapels, and you know that he's going to go and work all these like relationships that he's made. He's going to have like the Newsboys come and like do some kind of thing at his house because now he knows all these famous people and bands and all this kind of stuff. So he's going to work that. But another thing that he does at chapel is tell terrible, and I'm not even exaggerating, I'm going to say terrible jokes. Oh my goodness. They have become legendary. I don't know where he gets these. Sometimes people send them in. Sometimes he's just come up with them on his own, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. But they always inspire groans from everyone.
Unfortunately, that's going to be my legacy. We were talking about all these heavy things, and it's going to be those stupid jokes.
Exactly. And he's had no, I think, I'm not even sure. I think you've equally offended any number of people with some of them. He's slammed women. He's slammed pastors.
Right.
He's slammed. So it's all been good. But
disabled.
Exactly. So so maybe you better give us a sample of one of those.
It's just a simple thing. Student sitting in a class, his teacher, he's not paying attention. His teacher looks back at him and says, Johnny, I'd like to know the answer to the question. He He looks back at her and he says, "Teacher, I don't think I know." She said, "Johnny, I want to know the answer to the question." He said again, "I don't think I know." She looks back at him and she says, "Johnny, I know the answer. What do you think?" He says, "I don't think I know." And that was the end of it.
Whoa. Okay. There you have it, folks. People are going to be telling that one. They're going to bring that
I
now.
I don't think I know.
Yeah. Okay. They're going to, you guys out there, you can use that one. Just attribute it to HB. Because I know you won't want to take it on for yourself. So good one. Good one.
Thank
okay.
you, Lisa.
Well,
thanks.
HB, it has been a privilege. I neglected to say, I mean, obviously we're going to follow you and figure out where in the world you're going from here other than your desert escapades. H has also written, many of you know, Pastors at Risk. His most recent book is Pause, Recharge, Refresh. He's written tons of books out and about, pastor to pastor, a great series. If your pastor is not aware of that yet, make sure that you do tell him about it. It's a great encouragement for pastors. And H, we just wish you on behalf of Boundless just all the best.
Thanks,
as you
Lisa.
Move on from here. And it's going to be exciting to see what God has next for you, because if you are not yet in glory, that means he's still using you. So
I hope so. Thanks. You're doing a great job with Boundless, I tell you that.
Oh, well, it's been a blast. It's fun. And like I said, we're just so inspired and encouraged to have, you know, just guys here at Focus like yourself who have walked this road with the Lord for many years, and we need to avail ourselves of your wisdom and just encouragement that we've received.
And to the young adults we're talking to, I know you won't do it, but I'd give anything if you would. Make an appointment with your pastor, associate pastor, youth leader. Just talk to him and them about what you might be able to contribute to your local church.
Oh, no, they're going to do it now, because we're going to put it up on Facebook, and okay. we're going to tell people to write in or on the blog and write in with their stories.
Okay.
Summary conversations, meet with your pastor, tell us what you learned from them. We're going to do that, get some feedback on that. We may also start a contest. HB is unwilling to explain to us what HB means. I am going to find a way to get it out of Sue McFadden, his assistant. I'm going to work on that within the next month or so, because apparently she knows. But in the meantime, maybe we'll do a contest for people to name your initials. And
let me just say this one thing. No one has ever guessed.
Really?
No one has ever guessed. And I've been called some very, very, how would I say, ill-conceived, disrespectful.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to look up top Nazarene pastor names of, of the 20th century and see if any of them have an H or a B, and see what we can figure out. So, H, it's been a privilege. Thanks so much.
Bye. From the birds that sing in the tallest trees to the human life of you and me, from the desert sands to the place we stand, he is God of all, he is everything. Whoa. Giving my life to the only one who makes the moon reflect the sun. Every starry night, that was his design. I'm giving my life to the only son who was and is and yet to come. Let the praises ring. He is everything. He is everything.
Well, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I have John Thomas on the phone. John, welcome.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for having me today.
Great to have you from down there south of us, southeast. So we, are privileged to have you by phone.
Far away. That's the bottom line.
Too far away.
Just
we're just
too far away.
We're doing these by phone until you guys decide to move to Colorado.
I hope that's soon.
Maybe it'll just be a matter of time. We'll see. We'll pray
My
about
it. My wife would love that.
I know. We'll tell her to get it done.
Okay.
Tell her to just work on you. Get this happening. So that's good. But we're glad to have you here by phone in the meantime. So you are going to answer a question here from a guy who is 21 years old. And I love his question. I love the fact that he even put this out here. All the girls are going to cheer when they hear this. So he says, I am 21 years old, finishing my junior year of college at a Christian school. I have part-time employment, but I'm still a legal dependent on my parents and a year away from graduating and even starting to look for a full-time job. I feel torn between two choruses of voices in my head. One is with the Christian community, telling guys to grow up, quit dawdling, and commit. I realize that I have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be surrounded by a large community of godly women at my Christian school, and my own natural desire to seek a wife is quite strong. The second chorus tells me that I need to be fiscally prepared to take care of myself before thinking about supporting another. Where is the balance? I don't want to jump the gun on a relationship before I'm ready to provide, but I don't want to miss an opportunity or use logistics as an excuse to dally.
That's such a good question.
Yeah.
And I love that he says he's a legal dependent of his parents.
Yeah.
Make sure he's not an illegal dependent of his parents.
Exactly.
The quick answer to that is no. You don't have to be fully financially ready to support a family the day that you start pursuing a mate. I mean, that obviously is something that you've got to have in your mind, a plan about how that is going to happen in your life, whether you pursue a mate or not. But you, just like he said, you're in a great place right now in his season of life and where he is to begin finding who that person might be. If he waits until he's gainfully employed, you know, after he leaves this environment and then he goes to another place where it might be a very different environment, it's going to be a more difficult time for him.
Mm-hmm.
So my answer to him is no, you don't have to be ready the first day you start pursuing. You just start pursuing when you think it's the person you want to pursue. You need to have a plan in your mind about what your timetable is, and everybody's timetable is going to be a little bit different based on what season of life you're in. I mean, if you're in college, you've got a couple of years left, then, you know, it might be a while before you can walk down the aisle, but that doesn't mean that you put off that process. Go ahead and get started. Go ahead and pursue. It's a great time in your life to do that. And then just be open about the timing when you find that person and the connection gets started and you finally make it to that conversation. You just say, hey, you know, I want to be able to provide for us. I want to have a good job for us. And that's not going to happen for another year or a year and a half, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, you know, the timing of all of this is might be a little longer than what I would like for it to be, but I want it to be right. And that's okay. You just say that, you talk about it, and you figure that out.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't always have, a lot of people have in their mind, what does it look like for me to be ready to get married from a financial standpoint? And that, you know, there's a sliding scale to that. I think it's ideal for, you know, for you to have some good income coming in, and you don't have, you know, you don't have a lot of economic stress, but a good number of people get married in college, and it's really tight, and they figure it out. Some people get married, and they don't have the best job that they want to have, but they figure it out. And so you work together as a couple, and you figure that out. I mean, Alfie and I, my wife and I, were married, and then after we got married, I decided to go to seminary. Well, as a full-time student, I couldn't bring in a lot of income. I worked some. I worked part-time. I did what I did, but she put me through seminary. So you work together on those kinds of things, and you do what's best for your, you know, you do what's best for you as a couple and ultimately as a family. You know, the other side of that is, of course, don't just leap out there and say, well, I have no idea how we're going to make it, so but let's just dive in anyway and let love,
yeah,
you know, live on love. That isn't what, yeah, I'm saying, so don't misunderstand me.
Right.
But pursue when you see the person, when you have a sense that this is the person, and get going. And then, you know, put together your plan for how it's going to work out for marriage after that. But, you know, that might mean a longer dating courtship period. Wish it was shorter, but maybe it just can't be. You just work that part out.
Yeah, I like what you say about the, you know, it being a process, because I think it is necessary for him to get a plan and to evidence that plan. So to not be just kind of willy-nilly like, okay, well, I'm young, you know, we've got all this time ahead of us and stuff. Because, you know, if they move towards marriage, they can't be sitting in premarital counseling with the pastor saying, so, you know, what are you going to do to support her? And you're just like, oh, well, I don't know.
You need a plan and you need a timetable as best as you can put one together.
Right. And it may be, as you said, living on nothing. I mean, almost nothing, certainly by the standards we have now, because now we have this assumption that young adults are going to move out, get married, and have a home full of Ethan Allen furniture. So
yeah, and Alfie, you know, Alfie's grandparents got married in the Depression, when they were 19 and 18. Now, I'm not advising that, but I'm just saying, You rise to the occasion that you need to, and to want to step into the same standard of living that we left home, mm-hmm. that our parents have worked their whole lives to get, is a mistake to think you're going to be able to do that. And that just puts yourself under a bunch of economic stress you don't need to be under.
Right.
But you do need a plan for how are you going to eat,
right?
And where are you going to live, and what kind of roof are you going to have on your head, over your head, and how are you going to get through that? And what if we have a baby? Mm-hmm. We may not plan on having a baby that early in our marriage, but what if we do, and how will we make it if we do that? Those are things you do have to think through, and a marriage counseling, good premarital counseling can help you do that.
Yeah. And I do want to say, I mean, maybe this is just my opinion, but I'm always keeping it real here on The Boundless Show, that if a guy is in a situation where he is out of college, but he is now 30 and living at home and is not financially in a place to support someone, maybe he needs to work on a couple other things.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's all kinds of issues that could be going on.
I think there's a difference between a college student and a guy who's just not moving along.
Yeah, this guy's a junior in college. There's no, I mean, he's not one to be accused of being lazy.
Right.
He's asking a great question at a great age, and he's one of those that probably doesn't even need to be asking these kinds of questions, because he's going to do it right, most likely.
Yeah.
But I think it's great for the other guys to be listening in on this, to say, you know, when you're a junior in college, it's a great time to be thinking about these things.
Yeah.
And it's a great time to be, you know, look, some people fall in love in high school. And they somehow manage to get through college as a couple without getting married, and then they get married afterwards. So,
Yeah. You
know, you don't have to wait until everything is set for you to then identify that girl and start going. You know, you got to kind of go with the flow sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
We make our plans, and then the end result's in the Lord's hands anyway. And so we do our best on our end, and then try to follow the steps that God leads. What a great question.
Yeah. Well, great thoughts from you, and thanks for weighing in on that one, John. I think that's good, and I think we kind of really took a number of different scenarios that could play out with this. So, all right. Well, folks, that is it for this week's show. Write to us with any future questions at editor@boundless.org so we can address them. Make sure that you are catching up on previous shows, because we have a lot of people tell us on Facebook, oh my goodness, I just listened to like 25 shows this week. I don't even know how you're doing it. I don't know how you're fitting it in, but we love it. So make sure you continue to do that. And of course, catch more of John Thomas over at boundless.org, where he answers our Boundless Answers question for men every other week. He alternates with Candace, as you all well know. So great insights there in print as well. So join us next week for The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We will see you around.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.